Mr. Diaz, the One Song Nation. What song? It's the 80s.
Welcome to One Song, the podcast that I host. My name is Luxury with my co-hosts, Diallo Riddle, and today we have a guest named Guillermo Diaz. He's great. Start the show now.
I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury, also known as the guy who talks about interpolation on the internet.
All over the internet.
Everywhere.
And this time on One Song, we're getting into the groove.
All right, today we have a very special guest who you might know from his roles on TV shows like Weeds, Chappelle's Show, Broad City, and Girls.
And you most certainly will recognize him as Huck from Scandal.
But today we are talking to him about a different role. It's a part he plays in his daily life as a Madonna superfan. Welcome to the show, Guillermo Diaz.
Hello.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming down
Thanks
to our
for having
show.
Me.
Yeah.
And we, you know, I have to say right off the bat that one of the reasons I was so excited is because I feel like, you know, outside of the TV shows, like, you're just a funny dude. And we'd been, you know, we were like, oh my God, he wants to come on One Song? No way.
Yeah, we're pretty flattered.
No way. So this is very exciting for us. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, man. You know, it's funny you say I'm a funny dude because I've done all these movies with comedians and I don't do stand up. I'm not, you know. I'm much more comfortable doing drama and like serious stuff, but I just kind of got thrown into these, you know, comedic movies that I remember being on sets and all these guys, Dave Chappelle and, you know, Tracy Morgan and everybody just cracking jokes left and right. And I was just like, hey guys, you know, I was just like the audience, but anyway.
But I do think that there is something, I mean, first off, there's a lot to be said about the person who's taking it seriously, the straight man,
right?
Comically underrated in comedy. But I think that, you know, what you bring is so, it's a certain amount of just that straight, funny realism. It's like when I have three kids. It's like the kid who's not trying to be funny is always
right,
the funniest.
Right. Oh, yeah, I'm brilliant. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm really good. No, I'm kidding. You have three kids? Oh, my God.
I have three kids, man. I got three kids.
I have three goldfish and a little dog, and sometimes I'm like, I got to fucking feed them again? Like, what is going on? I can't imagine having three little humans running around.
You learn that life is resilient.
Every day.
Life is very, you know, these kids, they tend to survive, and we're so happy to have them here. Do you have any siblings? I have two older brothers.
Yeah.
So I have three boys.
Oh yeah, there
and
you go.
From three
so
boys.
I was a one of the triples, the three boy thing. Yeah. but my older brother was like into like Judas Priest and Ozzy Osbourne and all that. So I grew up like loving heavy metal because he loved it. But then somehow I went to the Blonde Ambition tour when I was like 17, and that's when I was like, oh my God, I love this woman.
But you had been like, the that morning you had put on like metal up your ass or something like
exactly,
that?
Exactly,
like,
yes.
Metallica.
So like you're listening to metal exclusively, like not even the radio or
no,
your...
I was listening to the radio, but at home, you know, my brother would bring home.
And he was cool. He was like your older brother. So
yeah,
like that music was cool.
Yeah, yeah. And then I really did, you know... I really did appreciate it. And I loved Ozzy Osbourne and Iron Maiden and all that stuff. But of course, I listened to the radio. I loved Lisa and, you know,
Cover Girls.
We're
going
to talk
about Lisa
too.
Lisa, the cold jam.
Oh,
yeah.
The freestyle.
Some of the things that brought me personally to this song, and thank you again for choosing it, because to our listeners, we sent him a couple of Madonna songs to choose from, and this is the one he sent back. And I'll say, you know, as a fan of like what later became known as freestyle, like this was really, this song like just sounds like, a sound that to me never gets old the way that other genres get old.
Yeah, you know.
But we're going to get into all that. It sounds like you first fell in love with Madonna at a concert.
Yes. It was the Blonde Ambition tour. And I had never seen her live. I mean, she'd only done like two tours before that.
What album is this for?
This is for Like a Prayer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so I saw, and that, you know, that was her first tour. It was, she was like the first artist that sort of had a, you know, made every song was like a theatrical piece on stage, and And then, you know, here comes Like a Virgin, and she, you know, rises up out of the floor on a bed and masturbates at the end. And it was like nothing I had ever seen before on stage. And
you're with your family watching this?
I was with like two friends. Okay, so, yeah.
So it wasn't like cringy with
no,
the mom
yeah.
There.
My parents would have been cool though. My parents took us to see like The Exorcist in the movie theater and Lipstick. Do you remember that movie Lipstick about a woman that gets raped and my parents didn't give a shit.
Well, you're growing up in New York City proper. Yeah. Like you got cool New York parents.
Yeah, and they also didn't speak English. They don't speak English, so they were like, "Oh, cool."
So they would bring us on.
We were just traumatized.
They didn't know what rated R meant.
Yeah,
really good.
No, offer really solid. Can I ask you real quick what stood out about Madonna to you that first time you saw it?
I think the fact that she didn't give a fuck about anything and she was like just willing to take these risks that were, you know, just so over the top and so provocative and sexual. Like she wasn't afraid of being sexual, and then she was like, and I freaking read, you know, 100 books a year.
Yeah.
Like she's super intelligent. She's just not, you know. So there was like thought behind everything she did. And of course, you know, for growing up as a gay man, like, I don't know, she just became like that middle finger that was like, fuck your, you know, just your typical heteronormative, whatever bullshit.
Yeah.
And she just became like a, you know, like a hero, like an icon who was out there speaking out for us. And, you know, she was the first one that spoke out, you know, about gay rights and AIDS and, you know, practicing safe sex and all that stuff.
I mean, like, so, I will say, definitely, she came with a political component that I didn't see from many of the other. Like, I don't know if this is the current pantheon, but, like, when I thought about the 80s then and, like, in the 90s and 2000s, I always thought there were three. There was Michael Jackson, there was Prince, and there was Madonna.
Me too. Like, those were, and they're all born in 1958.
No way, true? Really?
Yeah, I've always think of them as connected for that reason.
What was in the water? Yeah. Probably radiation.
Probably.
Yeah.
Some atomic fall off. But
can we please bubble wrap Madonna? We cannot lose the third.
You need to protect her.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah.
You need to protect her.
She made it longer than those guys.
Yeah.
Right. But you're right. Like, I think about Michael. I think about Prince. I love their music. But, like, Madonna, like, from the time that she was doing, you know, videos where she was kissing Jesus to, you know, even before I really even knew what LGBT was back then, like, I was like, oh, her friends seem to run the whole rainbow. I probably didn't even think in terms of rainbow, but like it was very obvious. Like she was friends with her dancers.
Yeah.
They were in the videos and it was a different vibe.
And you're right, out of the three of them, Prince was obviously very sexual and he has Am I Black or White? Am I Straight or Gay? Every now and then there's some lyrics that are like, but she
and
was
even that's early on. Like that's pre purple.
I was gonna
Prince,
say, I think definitely Madonna kind of held her own in terms of like being very explicitly like, this is important, gay people matter.
Oh,
a million versions of like using her platform for like spreading the word of diversity and just like anti-heteronormativeness.
And in Truth or Dare is the first time we saw two men make out on the big screen.
That was
like
such
that was
a big deal.
That was huge.
That's
and
crazy to think
you know,
about
being
how big
a teenager, gay, knowing I was gay and I'm not out of the closet, seeing that it was like, okay, I'm okay. Like I'm gonna be okay.
I was gonna ask at 17. Too. You were not.
Oh yeah, no, okay. I didn't come out till I was like 27. You know, it was the fucking 80s in Washington Heights. I wasn't like I'm out, you guys.
But this planted a seed for you of like representation.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it was all about, you know, hiding who you were and you couldn't be yourself.
Now we know, but I want to let the audience know that you have a tattoo of Madonna. That is super cool. But I have to ask, what is the most extreme thing you've done for your love?
For Madonna.
Yeah.
I not only have one tattoo, I have like 9 Madonna tattoos. I've gotten more.
When did you get the first one?
When did I get it?
Yeah, how old were you?
It was like 8 years ago. 10 years ago, maybe. It wasn't that long ago.
Uh-huh. It wasn't right after the Blind Ambition tour.
It wasn't right after the Blind Ambition tour, no. But then I have another portrait of her on my chest. Wait, what was the question?
The craziest.
We were asking extreme things you've done out of love of.
I used to work at a photo stock agency in New York City. And for, you know, for this generation, they're like, probably like, what the fuck is that? And I used to file pictures of celebrities. So session photographers and paparazzi would come in and bring their slides, and it was all on slides. And anyway, so I would file all the pictures, you know, in the appropriate, files. And, and they all knew I loved Madonna. And one of the photographers, Steve Eichner, I still remember his name, was like, hey, I'm shooting the girly show tomorrow. Do you want to come with me? And I'll say you're my assistant and you'll be in the pit. Wow. So the photographers get to go in the pit, which is right there in front of the stage for three songs. And then they leave, but they, you know, they're photographing her. And I was like, yeah. And he brought me, and there I was, like, cut to me in the pit with it. And he gave me a camera because he was like, just act like you're taking pictures, because I wasn't a photographer.
I don't know. They can't tell who they are.
But as I'm taking pictures, I kept just putting the camera down and going, Madonna! I love you! Like, and people were like,
these photographers are like, this guy's not professional.
This photographer really loves Madonna. And I got some photos back, and I have this one amazing photo that somehow, you know, I took one really good one, and it's up in my wall.
You beat all the professional photographers.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. So that's
there
probably
was love. There was love in your clicks. You know, there was a certain sort of like, I get this.
There was love in my clicks. Yeah.
And you've seen almost every tour of hers, right?
I have. The only two I haven't seen are the Virgin Tour and the Who's That Girl Tour.
Now, we asked you what song you wanted to talk about on today's show, and you chose Into the Groove. Good choice. I'm just curious, of everything in the Madonna catalog, what do you love about this song? What does it mean to you?
Honestly, I've been obsessed with Desperately Seeking Susan lately because it's on Tubi.
Yeah.
Shout out to Tubi.
Shout out to Tubi. We had a Tubi conversation earlier.
If you want to talk about extreme
or Canopy or Tubi,
and fandom,
the same.
We're talking Tubi.
Fuck. Come on, Tubi. Come on, Tubi. So I've been watching that movie like almost every week. It's one of those movies, too. I love it. It's a really good movie, but then it's a really feel good. I don't know why it makes me feel good. Maybe because it's New York City in the
80s. It's New York in the 80s.
It's familiar and it's Madonna.
Go ahead. No, sorry. Please.
I was just going to say that Stephen Wright is in it, who plays the guy on the couch in Half Baked.
He's a dentist.
Yeah. This little movie called Half Baked that I did. but yeah, and then, you know, this song is just so, it's so New York, it's so disco, it's just so vibey, it's so good. And another, this song also has this funny story for me, because you guys aren't from New York, right?
We both lived there, though.
You both lived there. Yeah. Do you remember the Robin Bird show?
Yes, of course. On Access, the sort of pseudo-porn interview.
It was like a porn, like she's
in her 50s or 60s or 80s, who knows, and she's sort of taking it off.
Yeah, after like 1 o'clock in the morning, you could see the show on public access.
Okay, for all of you from the Bird, if Santa can't come down your chimney, you just may be able to see me.
And, you know, as a young, horny teenager, I would watch it, and she would have female dancers come out and strip, and then she'd have male guys come out and strip. And I remember and I used to record when the male guys would come out and strip. But this one guy, the first guy I recorded, danced to Into the Groove. So whenever I hear the song,
that explains
seared
everything
in my head. I mean, other things too, but that very specifically, right. I think of this guy coming out and, you know,
I love
shaking
that.
His
I
balls.
Love that.
Can you say shaking?
You can
on
say
the
all
podcast?
Of that. Please say all the words. Say every word.
We're hoping that they sue us. It's more publicity.
I hope so, right? Yeah, hell yeah.
Before we go any further, Guillermo, I just want to say on this show, we go really deep into the song that we discuss, and we'll be playing you the isolated stems so that you can even hear Madonna's vocals with no backing track. But before we get there, Luxury, I know you want to help set the stage.
Yeah, we're going
to
set the stage a little bit of history before we get into the specific moment. That's one of the fun parts of the show, is that we are, because it's one song, it's also one moment, it's one era. And Madonna, as we've sort of been alluding to, jumping around historically, she wonderfully has had so many eras. Like, let's steal that word back from Taylor Swift. Like, Madonna has this song, exactly, right? Madonna is the true queen of pop. And this era for her, I mean, mean, let's talk about it. To me, I think about, I mean, first of all, she's at University of Ann Arbor, is that right, in the 70s? Mm-hmm. And she starts, moves to New York, and she starts being in bands, which are kind of punk-y bands, or kind of rock punk bands.
Right. Well, she said she wanted to be a part of Bowie's scene, didn't she?
Okay, is that right?
I feel like I read
that. He was a huge inspiration to her. Yeah, David Bowie.
That makes so much sense, mm-hmm. because what she's doing is she's an artist, a dancer, and a musician, and the musician is arguably just kind of one of the things she is. Like, pop music is a vehicle to express,
exactly,
as we've just been discussing. What do we think about all of these things about Madonna and sexuality? Music is a means of expression for that. Mm-hmm. So she comes to New York. She is in a band called, I think the
Breakfast
first one
Club.
Was the Breakfast Club. That's right.
Oh, and then that is like an 80s explosion.
Right?
Stuff going
that
on
name.
That name is so 80s. Is that before the
it
movie?
It was before the movie, yeah.
Did it inspire the movie? Do we know?
I don't know. I don't think so.
It's just kind of a thing people
knows?
Say,
yeah.
The Breakfast Club. Then she's in Emmy and the Emmys.
Oh, that's right.
I don't know much about these bands. It's hard to find the actual recordings, but she hasn't gotten into synth pop yet, which is the next era. And in my mind, this song, Into the Groove, is kind of a little bit the end of the synth pop era and the beginning of the next one. But we'll get into that when we get into the music. A little more about the history. So she's in these bands. She's going to Danceteria. She's becoming a queen of the nightlife. She's meeting everybody. And actually, she's, by the way, importantly, meeting all these DJs and underground producers, which becomes a through line for her whole career, because she's always attuned to what the next trend is and which DJ is spinning it. So she's bringing in the Jelly Beans. Later in life, it's the Shep Pettibones and the Stuart Prices and the Nelly Hoopers. She's always like making pop music with who was the coolest underground.
But at Danceteria, she's friends with Mark.
At Danceteria, she's friends with Mark Kamens. Is that how we pronounce it? And between that connection and one with Stephen Bray, who goes back to her college days, actually, and apparently they moved to New York together, and I think they're in a band.
He's in the Breakfast Club as well.
So Stephen Bray is an important part of the story because he is the co-writer of Into the Groove. So we're going to get into some of the work he did when we listen to the stems. So Madonna has a demo, which she had written with this Mark Kamens, and it was intended for this artist named Shane. Now, Shane is, at the time, a 15-year-old, and when you read now with 2023 eyes, a 15-year-old protege of Mark Kamens, you're like, why does this man have a 15-year-old protege? So no shade, but like that's a little bit, you know, I'm sure everything was on the level. But Shane actually went on to have a couple hit songs, including this one. This is Call Me Mr. Telephone, which went to number one on the dance charts in 1985, and listen to her voice, because when I heard it, I was like, oh. I'll call him Mr. Telephone, they said. I'll call him Mr. Telephone, they said. Rock this beat to the funky beat. Rock this beat to the funky beat. A little bit to me, it sounds like Madonna vocal similarity, right? But this is a 15-year-old black girl.
Yeah.
So Mark Kamens is not happy that the song is given away, and later goes on to say that, you know, he's pissed, in quotes.
Really?
That's a big 80s thing to say.
I feel bad that there's this whole trend in music where like a young black woman does something and reaps no benefit.
Absolutely no benefit. Well, she got a number one on that song, but she didn't get Into the Groove, which was intended for her. So that's a good point. But to your point about her being robbed, you know who else was robbed? Madonna was robbed. This song was not a number one single, and it should have been because of just the randomness of how it came out.
Well, in the United States, right?
In the United States, it was robbed of it being a number one because the record label had two big songs already out, and they didn't want to interfere with the chart success.
Right.
And
of
they
Angel.
Didn't. They didn't know. They didn't release it because they put it as the B-side of Angel.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah, and it would have done
blockbuster.
It wasn't
eligible for charting because of that. It goes to number one in the UK and does in other countries, but in the US it never gets the love it deserves on the radio and number one
status. I've always felt like this is probably my favorite 80s Madonna song, hands down.
Really?
And hands down. And I had no idea it was the chart success until we were researching this episode. I mean, like, to know that it is to this date her biggest single ever in the UK, I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And
either.
That is really wild stuff.
But this song is so special because in spite of all of these, like, impediments to being heard by the public, it not being released as a single, it not being eligible, it wasn't even on the Desperately Seeking Susan soundtrack,
which is insane.
Totally
so
insane.
Weird.
It still has survived all these years to be, as we're saying, to be one of the best known and best loved songs in Madonna's huge catalog.
That's so weird. It's crazy, right?
It's
like Vogue. I never knew that Vogue is on the Breathless, I'm Breathless
on the
soundtrack.
Dick Tracy.
The Dick Tracy soundtrack.
I just feel so bad for the desperately seeking Susan soundtrack.
Like, right? Like, I know. Like, the
like they showed up with all those other songs. And nobody was buying it for leaving Atlantic City.
Yeah.
You bought the soundtrack. You're like, wait a second. I don't want to listen to this.
I got to read one more thing before we get into the stems, okay, because we're talking about Desperately Seeking Susan. Everyone, pause the podcast, go watch the movie and come back, because it is such a joy to watch.
But do come back.
She's a woman of mystery. A woman of surprises.
What are you doing here?
A woman named Susan.
Come on, come on.
Orion Pictures presents Desperately Seeking Susan.
It's important to remember that Madonna was cast for Desperately Seeking Susan when she was a star, but not a global megastar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And what happens is they use this song. It's in the movie. Madonna's presence in the movie. All of it leads to, I found this great quote where Rosanna Arquette turned out to be really unhappy about the evolution of Madonna's superstardom as shooting is ongoing. She goes, "It was completely unfair. As soon as Madonna came into the picture, the script was changed to suit her. I told them that if Susan was going to be nothing more than a two-hour rock video spotlighting Madonna, well, I didn't want to be a part of it. A disco dance movie isn't what I signed on to do. However, I couldn't get out of it."
She's so wrong. I love Rosanna Arquette, but she's so wrong. I don't think it's that at all. I think Rosanna Arquette shines in the movie.
She's amazing in the movie.
It's all about her reemerging as this woman, finding herself and wanting to
give up being a housewife, break away from a terrible marriage. Right.
Yeah. Madonna's great in it, but I still think Rosanna Arquette really shines. She's the star. Yeah.
After the break, you will hear Madonna's untreated vocals. You will hear a very punchy synth bass line. And we'll be getting deeper into the groove with Guillermo Diaz. Stay with us.
Deeper and deeper.
Deeper and deeper.
I love that song. Deeper and Deeper is a great song. Stick around. We'll be right back. Luxury, I'm so excited to hear these stems. Our guest, Mr. Diaz, he is excited.
Guillermo, are you excited?
Well, yeah, kind of.
Okay. Fair. That's
He's
a fair
only
answer.
Being timidly excited because we don't want to step on your toes.
Oh, no, there's no toes to step on here. Well,
so
you know
what you got for us?
Brand new shoes, so please stay away from the white.
Those are very clean shoes.
Very clean. Yeah.
What do you got for us?
I mean, what's cool about these stems, it kind of reminds me of, we did an episode, Let's Go Crazy by Prince. Something very similar that emerges is how lo-fi this song is. It's really crazy. It was recorded on an 8-track Tascam, like a home recording equipment.
Oh, wow.
It was recorded, the vocals were recorded. You know how, like, if somebody gives you a microphone on stage, like even at a high school, like, you know, at a grammar, you know, fifth grade concert, it's gonna be a Shure SM58. It's a $99 microphone. It's kind of crazy that was the process behind it, and this is the huge global pop sensation 40 years later song that we all still love. It's such a lo-fi song. And again, with the Prince analogy, because when we listen to Let's Go Crazy, that song was similarly recorded not in a big fancy studio with $1 million equipment. So that's the first thing I just want to say before we get into it, because what you're going to hear may shock you.
What stems are you playing for us first?
Let's start with the beats. And one more thing to say, actually, is that, so this is, again, Stephen Bray and Madonna co-wrote this song. I believe Stephen Bray is the programmer behind all these and performer of, this is all electronic. So it's all, I'll tell you as we go one at a time, but all of the beats and all the synths are being generated from machines, arguably in his home studio. Again, this 8-track, very lo-fi. There's a second version, though, as we alluded to, which is arguably equally maybe more famous, which is the Shep Pettibone remix. And it is using the same elements. It adds some percussion, a piano solo. If we have time, we might get into that too. Let's start, though, with the original version. And let's start with the percussion. There's a tom there. Clap, hi-hats. And that's this lo-fi beat coming out of...
So good.
An Oberheim DMX. Now, on the internet, this is one of these songs that has like crazy rabbit holes you can go down to get lost on. I'll spare you all of that, but it's probably an Oberheim DMX. It might be a DX. We're not sure. All that matters, though, is that this is that same drum machine that we talked about on the New Order episode. Mm-hmm. So it's the same one that did Blue Monday. And And it's also one of the ones we talked about with Jimmy Jam, because he had been using it and was starting to switch over to the Lynn drum, which is the Prince drum machine.
I'm surprised we're not hearing more Roland TR-808s on this show. Because I always felt that's the drum machine that took over the world.
Yeah.
And yet, some of our favorite songs are this DMX or DX.
One of these days,
you can debate it at home.
We'll do the Planet Rock episode. We'll be definitely getting into that among
Roland 808s.
Yeah.
Okay,
cool. Rock.
So those are the
Planet
beats.
Rock.
Yeah, exactly.
Planet Rock, that's the one. Don't stop. Do not stop. And now we get to the part that I know I'm the most excited about.
Yes.
Like, what is arguably the heartbeat of the song, the best part, is this sick, sick bass line. That synth
so
bass.
Good.
I want to hear your reaction first, and then we'll talk a little bit about the details. But
so good. I have no idea what you guys were talking about, all that DX.
the drum machine stuff, the
lingo.
The music nerd production stuff. But as a listener and a lover of the music.
It's wild, because you could hear just a tiny, like a second of that, and know it's into the groove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you know what
so
I mean?
So distinctive.
I have a question. I don't know. What instrument is generating that?
So this is, again, the rabbit hole thing. I am 88% sure from my research that it's a Roland MKS-80, which is basically a Jupiter 8 synth, but as a rack mount. It is known for being digitally harsh. If you listen to it, again,
I like the digital harshness.
Right? The lo-fi thing that I was referring to, we heard it in the drums. You can hear this kind of like crunchiness a little bit.
This is my favorite part of the song, I will admit.
Yeah,
like
this is the heart, the heartbeat and the
heart.
Yes,
as a DJ, like, you know, you try not to do too much with the treble and the bass line or whatever, but whenever I would get to certain parts of the song, especially the bridge, like I would do everything I could on my mixer to isolate this bass line because
right.
it is so, and I never even
so
really
satisfying.
Noticed the like at the end of the of the
that's
end of
the
this bar.
Best part, that's a weird little moment.
It feels very
octaves.
Daft Punk. You know, I know that Daft Punk is trying to go for this sound, but like that harsh synth line, like that
notes that it's very Marauder, it's very Giorgio Moroder in that moment with the da 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 da. But I just want to talk a little bit for a minute about like the bass line influences, because it is this electro funk kind of boogie moment. We talked a little bit about this with Jimmy Jam too, right? Because they're programming synths, these bass lines, which means you can do things that are very hard for a bass player to do. In particular, those 16th notes. And it's precise, and every note sounds exactly the same. And that's very gratifying to the human brain on the dance floor, especially, right? It's you get into a groove, if
and
you
that's
will.
So, that's both interesting and very sad. That we're falling in love with the part that it would be very hard for a human to do.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, let the robots play the music.
Well, it very much evokes to me, do you remember this song by The System, You Are In My System? This is one of my favorites.
One they of also my did Don't Disturb This Groove. I'm sure
if I hear it,
Don't Disturb This
know.
Groove.
Oh, yeah, of course.
There's a way you say that I'm so into you.
Oh, my
but
God,
but this is their
so
other
good.
Song. Great song, right?
Yes.
But this song, You Are In My System,
yeah.
Not only a great song, but also on the soundtrack to Grand Theft Auto, Vice City. And so I used to steal cars and just be blasting, You Are In My System.
To this
so,
tune?
Yes.
But this bass line to me, it very much evokes this bass line, which is from 82, a few years earlier.
That section you played, I just want to see Eddie Murphy in his Axel Foley jacket running down the street about to tackle a dude.
Doing something, right?
There's something about that sound that's like screams 80s
that.
Movie.
Yeah.
the sound of that synth, programmed synths with the 16th notes, and it's funky and syncopated. It also shows up, and by the way, the same person programmed, David Frank programmed this other song, which you all will recognize, called I Feel For You by Chaka Khan. Right?
So
this
good.
Little moment of like a 16th note run of melodic run that is like just carves its way into your like
no
pleasure
centers.
No human
can do that.
Oh my God.
Okay.
So sick.
But I'll tell you what else no human can do. No human can bring up the name Chaka Khan without one of my aunts going, Chaka Khan?
Chaka Khan. Oh, totally.
Apparently it's impossible.
I think I'm one of your aunts because I can't hear that without doing that. Yeah.
I have a quick question. This is such a diver. Is that Melly Mel doing the rap on Chaka Khan?
It's Melly Mel. Yeah. It's Stevie Wonder on
Stevie
harmonica.
Stevie Wonder does the harmonica.
What?
And it's a Prince composition. Prince wrote the
song. And of course,
it's
off of Prince's first album.
He has a version of it, yeah.
Or is it the second album?
I'm not.
This is not that important, but it's an early Prince song.
We're gonna move away from this baseline rabbit hole that we are stuck in. Why? But it is a pleasure to be in here with you, Guillermo Diaz.
It's so fun to watch you guys talk about music. You guys are so into it. I love it.
We're gonna get deeper into it. We're gonna talk about
knowledgeable about it all.
We love nerding out about this stuff, and it's a pleasure to do it with you.
Oh, thanks.
Hopefully, man, you'll take some of it away and sort of nudge right? your friends next time and be like, "That's an Oberheim DMX," and they'll be like, "Wow, Guillermo."
And they'll be like, "Never invite Guillermo to anything ever again."
They'll be like, "Just pass that shit, pass the blunt, and shut up."
Yeah. What's the next stem that you got for us?
All right, so let's move on to the synths. Not a lot going on in this song in terms of the there's no guitars. We just have the beats you heard, that bass line. And then we have, there's three synths technically, but two of them are doing the same thing, just with different sounds. So the simplicity is another part of, I think, what makes the song so successful, because it gives Madonna and her melodies an opportunity to shine. But first, before we get to that, here is the iconic synth melody. Which is something you don't always notice, but you notice this.
Oh shit!
That's almost like Depeche Mode level. Like,
that's in the song.
Yeah,
that's so trippy to hear it isolated like that.
Yeah, that first part I've never even noticed.
No,
before.
Me
I'll play
neither.
It for you in the mix.
But the
here it comes. Not yet.
There's the yeah, right? This part.
Yeah.
For inspiration. And the weird thing happens again here. Hear that in the background?
Oh, in the background.
You know
yeah,
what?
Yeah.
You can hear it more prominently. I'm glad we're kind of backing up for a second. There's the demo version of this song that is far more hearable, and it's also what's used in the movie.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
The version in the movie is not quite the version we all.
Oh, and you'll recognize it. Yeah. Right? So much louder.
Oh, wow.
For
inspiration. So good.
Come on. Right? It's so interesting. So they obviously decided to bury that a little more for like the commercially
it's
released
so
version.
Good. So good.
I think I might actually like the demo version.
Right? I do too. It's like grittier, right?
Yeah.
It's
more really
like,
raw.
You can almost smell the sweat on West 21st.
Yes. Yeah.
All those goths. Yeah.
On that dancer dancing on the Robin Bird show. You can smell that sweat off his jaw.
We're all
guy.
Sweaty on that
where
show.
Is that guy?
Where is that guy? Where is that guy?
Don't you wonder that sometimes?
Oh, man.
They were
all the time.
Hella sweaty on that show. Let's get back to the synths. There's only one more sound.
There's only one more stem?
There's only two more synth stems, but they are doing the same thing. One of them is a Juno 106 playing the chords like this. And you can dance.
Yeah.
And then we have an OB8, which doubles that.
That's the one I hear.
And then together, right. It sounds like this. Makes it much bigger.
Wow. Yeah, you know what? You don't really hear that higher pitch synth, but you definitely appreciate it. It just
right.
Fleshes,
it adds
right?
something to it. Yeah.
And we were talking with Jimmy Jam about this.
So cool.
So cool, right? These sounds are the presets in these synths. So at the time, like, you would buy a synth and you would just go to, you know, 42 or whatever the patch would be to find a sound and use it. So these, I have a Juno 106 and I recognize these sounds. They are what you get before you start tweaking it to make it sound sort of more original. So it's really funny to hear in the mix, in this huge hit song, they just used what, when they bought the machine, it came with. So
now yeah, I do say ahead. before we hear, because I know we want to get to some vocal stems.
That's coming up next. Absolutely.
But before we get to those vocal stems, I have a question. Okay. People say never meet your heroes, but you have met Madonna.
You have? And, wait, I didn't know this.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Our researchers have done their flawless fact check.
Please.
And you've met
disclose.
Her. What was that like?
Tell
it
all.
Was,
and where was it? Like, tell
you can
us
go
about
slowly. You can tell us, like, yes. moment
it
by moment.
It was like meeting the Madonna, the Jesus Christ mother. It was exhilarating.
Madonna
it was
Christ.
So yeah. exciting. I did a show called Scandal, and Portia de Rossi was on the show. Portia's married to Ellen DeGeneres. Ellen is a huge fan of the show. Okay. Mm. She knows that I'm a huge Madonna fan. She's had me on the show to show my tattoo. Wow. And she said, when I have Madonna back on, I'm going to bring you on as the guest DJ. And she
Whoa.
Did. I show
she
up.
She told DJ Tony to go home then.
Yep, she said, go home, kick rocks, scram. And so I get there and she's like, come on, we're going to go watch Madonna rehearse. And there's me, Ellen, and Ellen's mom in the audience. No, you know, before the audience was there, and we watched Madonna do, you know, Practice. She did Living for Love twice. And wow. anyway, and then we start taping the show, and Ellen has me bring up this basket of Michigan State, like, you know, blankets and goodies and stuff, because Madonna's daughter just started going to college there. Uh-huh. And I walk up to Madonna and I say, look, I have you on my arm. And I show her my tattoo of her. And she's like, oh, aww. And she hugs me and kisses me. And then I get down on my knees and bow down to her. And she has this look on her face like, yep, that's where you should be.
That's accurate.
Down on the ground, bowing down to
her. Queen is happy.
But yeah, it was crazy. I still can't believe that happened.
That is insane.
Did you get a picture or autograph? Or I mean, you're on the episode, so there's video.
I mean, it's on the internet. It's know, you can Google it. I was shooting the show. I was shooting Scandal in the middle of taping that, and the producers were so cool. They were like, "We know you love Madonna. Go tape it." But they had a driver there waiting for me, and Ellen was like, "Stay after the show, and I'm going to introduce you properly, and we can talk and hang out." And they were like, "You got to get back to set."
No,
so I had to leave. Yeah,
did you tell them that you were like,
"Yeah"? I mean, they knew, but at that point, I had already hugged her and kissed her, and you know,
I get
on stage, so it was fine. Yeah.
All right, so let's listen to the iconic vocal intro. And I know for some of you, because it certainly was for me, it's a bit of a surprise when you hear it isolated, what it sounds like, what she's saying.
And you can dance. For inspiration.
There's not much bleed there is.
Come on. I'm waiting.
That I'm waiting is so waiting. Like... so sweet and fading out. Mm-hmm. But it was hard. I couldn't hear that for years.
She's so demure.
She's very demure. Yeah, that Madonna, just a little wallflower.
Yeah, shrinking violet.
Those shrinking.
But you can hear what I was mentioning about the SM58 microphone, and like there's like bleed. It's like this is probably intended to only ever be a demo. In fact, I read actually on Stephen Bray's Instagram, where he says when they told him that it was going to be a single and they needed to redo it, he told Madonna, like, let's go in and re-sing it. She's like, I'm not fucking re-singing it.
Really?
Yeah. So what we're getting is intended to have been a demo vocal, but there was no problem with it. It's what we've been hearing all this time.
And sometimes when you can try and do things twice, it just ain't as good.
No, never. Yeah.
It ain't perfect, but when you try and get it perfect, it's just something loses something.
You're trying too hard at that
also,
point, right?
Yeah. If the internet is to be trusted, she had a date after this song.
She was
rushing to get out of the studio.
She's like, she's in a hurry.
So she was like, let's get through this. And it became her number one single of all time in the United Kingdom.
Of course.
Well, it sounds like from what I read, she wasn't crazy about it. And we talked about maybe the record label held it back. It sounds like I've also read where maybe she wasn't so crazy about it and didn't want to release it as a single either. Maybe these things were combined, but like... We all love it.
Well, she loves it now. She's done it like on almost every tour.
Now it is time to hear Madonna's isolated vocals for the iconic chorus.
Get into the groove, boy. You've got to prove your love to me. Yeah. Get up on your feet. Yeah, step to the beat. Boy,
and that is indeed a double. I started with it isolated one take, and then we added a second one.
I like the doubling. Can you play me one of my favorite lines from the song?
Sure.
Only when I'm dancing.
Yes.
Can you play that
only
line?
Only when I'm dancing can I feel.
Let's do it.
Only when I'm dancing can I feel.
And then she doubles herself.
At night I lock the doors where no one else can see. I'm tired of dancing here all by myself.
Now that is one of my absolute favorite lines from a song from this era. Before I get into what I like about that line, is there anything you can say about this line? Because I think it's one of the great lines in this song.
It's so good. She kind of sounds like Minnie Mouse a little bit, right?
Very helium.
She's so cute. Yeah, she had such a cute voice.
She was very young.
You can hear how young she is. And it evolved.
Like 26, 27 at this point.
Yeah, right? Something like that.
Oh, wow, I didn't know she's already 26?
Yeah, I mean, a little older. Her pop stardom started a little later in life.
Amazing.
Than
Yeah.
That just goes to show how young the pop stars are now.
Yeah.
I feel like anyway. Can I just say, the reason why this is my favorite line is because... you know, there's just something about like a woman, I guess, you know, at the time it felt like a girl. It felt like sort of like the two sides of a personality. Mm-hmm. Like she's belting out this song, but then she admits that she's basically shy. Like she has to close the door. She has to lock it. And she's dancing in a room by herself. Like, you know.
Like Robin, dancing on my own. Like, right?
Yeah, a little bit. It's confessional, you know. And I always thought that line was excellent just from a creating a character for the song, You know, I
guess she's a shy girl, right?
Yeah,
right.
She's essentially a shy girl who, you know, can't just be. She's not out there just being like, you know, an extrovert all the time. Well, no, she's locked the door and she's dancing all by herself.
And you've nailed the premise in terms of what she said about how she wrote the song, which is, she said when she was writing it, she was sitting in a fourth floor walk up on Avenue B, and there was a gorgeous Puerto Rican boy sitting across from me that I wanted to go out on a date with. And I wanted to get it over with, but she was basically, she's too shy. So there is a shyness and wanting to communicate, but being a little too reticent that perfectly translates into the song, as we've been saying, that we were joking about demureness and Wallflower, but that's accurately the character in the song. So I think
I
picked
it.
Up on it, yeah.
Do you have a favorite lyric?
I don't know.
It's funny. That's fine.
It's that type of song, too, where, like, this is the first time that you guys are, you know, we're talking about the lyrics so specifically that I'm like, oh, that's what she's saying, you know? Because sometimes you love a song and you just keep hearing it for years, and you don't really know what they're saying or what the lyrics are. It just feels
good,
and it brings up, you know, just happiness in you. And so it's funny. I wouldn't even know what line to tell you.
And that's fine, because I think,
favorite.
You know, sometimes you can overthink things and sort of rob them of what makes them viscerally fun.
Yes.
So we are fans of both people who've dissected every single thing and people are like, hey, man, 30,000 feet is perfect. Leave it alone.
Yeah.
I can tell you my favorite part, and I'll play it for you. It's the bridge section. It's actually got a doubling and a harmony part. So I'll play it for you first by itself, and then I'll add the double.
Live out your fantasy here with me. Just let the music
set
you free. Touch my body, move in time.
I love the lows. When the lows come in, those are
Let's listen to those isolated, because that harmony is really nice. And you're right, she's going underneath the lead instead of on top, which often happens with harmonies.
Especially with girls. Girls sing.
Live out your fantasy here with me. Just let the music set you free.
Is that all her? Is that
all her?
That's just her.
It's just her.
That's just her. And, you know, like, we've dealt with other singers on the show where we're like, oh, that background you hear, that's professional background singer so-and-so. And then, like, but here, this is just Madonna. And you were saying that in your mind is ingrained this dancer on a late-night public access show. I can't hear these lower Madonna, because the image that sticks out to me, because the music video for this was just clips from the movie.
That's right.
You know, the image that sticks out to me is, like, I think she, like, kind of puts up her arms like this and, like, rocks the... Like, that to
underarms. Me... Sexy underarms. Sexy underarms.
Is it sexy underarms? That kind of got burned into my soul. I can't think
exactly
about
the
this
moment
bridge.
You were talking about.
Can't think about this bridge without thinking, like, oh,
this is
what's she doing?
Yeah, this is also the movie, and I think this is part of the video too. Is when she's drying her underarms with a hand dryer
in
the bathroom.
In this movie, right?
So it's very arm uppy. This movie,
at the train station at the beginning.
Yes.
I want to hear. Could you play me the bridge with just the bass synth? And her vocals, just those two things.
And that bass line is so sick, too.
Dude, I just want to hear Madonna, bass line, live remix happening right now, on one song.
I'll even give you the bass line isolated first, just for the satisfaction of that, and then we'll add the vocals.
And then you'll bring
in
the vocals? Okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
Live remix.
That's what I'm going to do. Okay. And just a quick story about this part, by the way. Stephen Bray had written a section that wasn't working. So when Madonna came in to sing, he had a melody in mind and it just wasn't working. It wasn't connecting. So on the spot, Madonna came up with the melody and lyric, that whole thing that we just heard. She just had came up with on the spot to sort of solve the musical problem. That's the genius that
she is.
I like
your verbs.
Yeah.
She's going places.
She's going places. Watch her. Watch her.
That is some sugary perfection right there.
Sugar is a really good
word. How do you
word.
Feel about that?
I love it.
I kind of want to go dancing right now.
It's so good. I feel like that's all I keep saying. It's so good. I love it. It's great.
This bass line, the whole song, it's got like three or four different ideas. They're all very propulsive, and they move the song forward. They're bouncing, and they're propulsive. It's really the heartbeat of the song. And just sort of the pulse that kind of guides you through the entire thing. And they're also melodically satisfying. Like this bass line I just played for you. It's like, I love just listening to that by itself. It's almost like its own little melody.
It is.
Yeah.
It's
So really, really genius work by Stephen Bray.
Genius work. Yeah. I mean, you can see why I do Trumpet Jet Dab Punk so often on the show, because mm-hmm. I feel like there's like a through line between some of my favorite stuff that preceded him mm-hmm. and what they were attempting to do with their robotic stuff. As we talked about, Into the Groove from Desperately Seeking Susan, it represents Madonna's first major role. What are some of your favorite Madonna acting performances? Do you have some?
Yeah, she did a movie called Dangerous Game.
What year is that?
That was 90s, like mid-90s, with a Harvey Keitel.
Oh, man.
And, it's like one of the best performances, in my opinion.
Without any major... She's the killer. Without any major spoilers, what happens in Dangerous Game?
She plays an actress in the movie, and... So it's a sort of it's kind of like they're documenting the rehearsal process, and then the filming of this movie in the movie, and the man that plays opposite Madonna is on drugs while he's doing the movie, while he's off set, and then he becomes super abusive in the fake movie. It's just it's a wonder. If you haven't seen, it's on Tubi as well. Dangerous Game.
What? Do the lines.
Oh, you think you're so smart.
Smarter than you.
You got it all figured out?
So, your favorite, your top three Madonna albums. Can you name them?
Oh, yeah. Erotica.
Okay.
Number one, for sure. Like a Prayer.
Yeah.
Man, this is hard. And Confessions on the Dance Floor.
Is that the one with Hung Up?
Stuart Price.
Hung yes, up. Yes,
hung
yes.
Up on you.
And Jump. It's got Jump, which is an amazing track as well. Get ready to jump.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
It's on the Devil Wears Prada soundtrack. Yeah, Confessions is a dope album. And it was also an amazing tour. Sorry.
It was an amazing tour? Yeah, no, yeah. I mean... You know, here's my thing. I loved music. I thought that was such a cool track.
Yes, me too.
And I feel like it didn't do like what I thought it was going to do. I thought it was so really going to mainstream. Cool.
Like a Kraftwerk Madonna like kind of collab is what it
sounds
like.
Yeah, totally. It just felt like she had been listening to what was happening in dance music. And for a long time, like, she kind of steered clear of like full-on dance album. But I feel like with that one, like, she sort of came in. It's a very danceable record.
With music. Yeah. And she has Don't Tell Me to Stop in that album, which is amazing, which I think was written by her brother-in-law, Joe Henry,
okay,
who wrote the song.
Is that the one with the acoustic kind of thing that starts and stops at the beginning? Yeah, I love
that
it's
it was her cowboy era.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, cowboy era. Hat.
Well, even Electric Ray of Light, she looked a little more cowboy.
Yeah.
Ray of Light, by the way.
Oh, that great might album, be my
great
favorite.
Great single. Favorite
it might be
Light.
Express Yourself.
That's
Ray of
an
Light
amazing album.
Into the and this whole conversation is like I have a big battle in my head about the best Madonna song raging right now because they're all so good.
Yeah, that was her I mean, I don't want to say comeback, but she had her kid. She had just had Lola Lourdes, and this was her album right after she
that's true, because there was a break from like
Erotica,
like the deeper and deeper Vogue
era.
And then Ray of Light was like a big shining moment. By the way, I have to say, before I ever was obviously old enough to go out, the music video for Deeper and Deeper, I was convinced that like to be able to go out to nightclubs in New York was like the most fun thing you could ever do. Like it just looked like they were having the greatest time. It's a great house track. I mean, like, I don't know if people ever mix it into house sets. I've never heard it, but like it's just a great early house track, you know?
And it's such a good video.
Such a good
video,
right?
There's so many iconic like People in that Hollywood lawn and Udo Kier and Debbie Mazar. And
were some of these like New York holdovers from like the factory crew or like,
oh,
this is like their own
Hollywood
crew?
Line.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Udo Kier was one of Andy Warhol's like muses. He played Dracula. He played Andy Warhol's Dracula, and he's in The Sex Book.
Yeah,
and Hollywood Lawn.
Hollywood Lawn
is
like a trans icon.
Yeah,
like,
well, she was also a Warhol superstar. Yeah. She did a movie called Trash.
And then
him.
Debbie Mazar is Debbie more of an '80s superstar.
Yeah,
the more like
who is Madonna's like best friend?
Right.
Debbie was the person that did her makeup from sort of the beginning of Madonna's career, and then they were buds since
since the '80s. I'm realizing as we talk about this, part of what I love about Madonna is that she represents this New York nightlife undergroundness, which we talked a little bit before the show started. But like, I have such a fantasy about living in other eras, and so many of them are New York's factory era, but also New York in the CBGB era, but also New York in the '80s, also New York in the '90s, the club kid era. And Madonna has a kind of a through line or connections, I should say, to so many of these things. She really represents that New York underground.
I can't agree more.
She really does. Even with all the artists, with Jean-Michel Basquiat and Keith Haring and Julian Schnabel, all those people.
But it's kind of like we've been saying, she's an artist first, and music is one of the many avenues.
Yeah,
she's telling a story. She's political.
Yeah,
it's visual. It's represententing ideas. And it's also music, and it's also dancing.
Of course.
Really put this package together. Yeah. So it makes sense, as you guys were saying, about the Bowie connection. Like, of course it's a Bowie connection.
Oh, yeah.
That's also
Bowie.
And
he was such a performer, too. Such a, a character-driven artist, because he would go on stage and create characters. I think he's probably one of the first, artists that did drag on stage,
absolutely.
Right? He was a musical.
Stardust,
I mean, he was already like pretty
from Mars,
established,
Aladdin,
right?
Sane. I mean, there's so many of these characters.
And Lady Gaga kind of continues that position a little bit too. Are you a Gaga fan, or are you a Gaga not fan because of Madonna? okay,
so Madonna.
Carefully.
Listen, I love Gaga, but now she's doing a fucking migraine headache medicine commercial.
What?
And I'm like, Gaga, what are you doing?
What are you talking about? She's
like,
doing a migraine headache
commercial? There's a commercial on network TV, and it's for migraine headaches. And she's like,
I know what it's like to perform through pain. If you're like me, one of the millions suffering from pain caused by migraine.
I'm like, girl, you lost me. You lost me, Lady Gaga.
I
can you imagine Madonna doing
Madonna
a,
doing that at all,
like an Ozempic or whatever? What is it called? I don't know.
To that point about club going and what seems so fun, when we were like, look at Madonna going out. Do you still go out? Do you still go to nightclubs? Do you ever,
Not nightclubs. I'll go to bars. Like I'll go to, little sort of neighborhood seedy bars, but it's not like back in the day where I used to go to the Tunnel and Red Zone and
the Limelight,
all those places, and it was so much fun. It was also humiliating and degrading, but it is soul crushing, because it was the era where you had to stand there
in
and
line.
Get picked to get in. You'd have to get in line, and they'd have to pick you to get into these clubs, and sometimes you wouldn't get picked.
It's still a little bit
home.
Like that. I mean,
it
like
is kind of,
we
huh?
still try and go out. Even though we're in our 40s, we still try and go out sometimes. But it does raise an interesting point, because I do feel like club culture has just kind of gone away. Like, I can't
really
think of a club that everybody's like, oh, you have to go to blank, especially since the pandemic. It's like club culture has not come back. I'd like to see it come back, because I think scenes are important to the evolution of music.
And so many great spots were closed down during the pandemic.
Right.
Did you ever go to Oil Can Harry's?
No, I don't know that one.
I went to Oil Can,
It was such a great dance
club. Save the Robots, though. Remember that one?
Which one?
Save the Robots, After Hours, Lower East Side. Okay.
But to your point about Oil Can, I feel like it's right on Ventura.
Yeah.
This is New York, sorry.
No, this is in L.A. In Ventura. Yeah, you're saying. The thing about Oil Can is like, it had been a disco forever. Like, apparently it had been a disco going back to the actual disco era.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate. Yeah, I've seen it. I think it just got repurchased, so maybe the new owners will open it up and make it cool.
No,
I feel like people
like
go
to
restaurants and bars now. They don't do clubs. They don't do that dancing thing.
Yeah, no.
And then the last question, if you were directing a Madonna biopic, we hear the studio, we're saying, Guillermo, you can direct it. Who plays Madonna?
That's a really good question. Lourdes Leon, her daughter.
Yeah.
That's
her daughter.
That's actually a good.
That'd be perfect. It's like Ice Cube. It's like Ice Cube's son doing it.
Yeah,
I can't imagine anyone else worthy to play Madonna. I know she actually cast someone for the biopic. It's the woman, the girl from Ozark, the lead, the blonde.
Oh,
she was in Inventing Anna. The lead in Inventing Anna. I don't.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Gosh, yeah, it's her. Yeah. It's Julie Garner. Julia Garner.
Yeah, is that her?
Yeah, she's the one who has the curly hair.
Yeah, yeah, Madonna cast her to play Madonna. Yeah.
That's perfect. Yeah. Every now and then you're just like, thank God that person became famous because you were already reminding me of a young Madonna. Is there anything
for the biopic?
Yeah, totally, for the biopic. Is there anything about Madonna that you have not shared today that you would like to share with us before we go?
No.
Let, we have said it all.
I know. I have to think about that one. Yeah. There's. I mean, I don't know. Just like I'm so disgustingly in love with her. But I think everyone knows that already. Do you know what I mean?
How about this, as a fan, what would you like to see her do next to tackle?
Oh man, I really would love to see her act again. To see her in a movie. But she said she's said it in the press.
Kind of retired.
She's done with acting. She's just going to do music. But you know, she said she's not going to do stuff before, and then she's done it.
Yeah.
So
it's like a character dying on a soap opera. You're like, the writers can figure out a way for their evil twin to come to town.
Exactly. Exactly. Is Cher really done with touring? No, she's not. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
This has been such a fun episode with you. Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
Clap for you.
And if you enjoyed Guillermo Diaz as much as we did, please listen to Unpacking the Toolbox, a Scandal rewatch, wherever you get your podcasts.
Dude, that was so much fun talking to Guillermo today.
So fun.
So fun, so funny, and such like a huge passionate fan. His passion brought out my passion, which was lying dormant for many years, but it was there. It woke up. My Madonna fandom is activated like a sleeper cell.
He awoke a sleeping giant.
Yeah, sleeping giant. All Madonna all the time from now on till the end of the year.
But before we go, I think you wanted to run through some interpolations and samples.
You know what? There's some fun covers, actually. So this song has been covered a lot and very diversely, and I want to play some of my favorite covers that I found.
Okay.
Now, I remember when this one came out, actually, it's kind of like with Toxic, you had like Franz Ferdinand covering Britney Spears and stuff like that.
Totally.
Well, this is Sonic Youth covering Into the Groove under, they call themselves Ciccone Youth for one album they did with Mike Watt from the Minutemen, and this song is called Into the Groovy. So, you know, a little darker, a little less pop.
Only a skinned tad off
the
darker.
Top, little pop skinned off the top.
That is definitely a cover that will please Sonic Youth fans.
And not many others. Well, but this one will please Sonic Youth fans potentially, as well as Madonna fans, especially the Cantonese contingent. How faithful it is. It's just a straight up Cantonese cover by Anita Mui.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
it took cool. you somewhere. You're transported, I can tell.
I was. I felt like I was like at a karaoke bar overseas.
Yeah. Yeah. Where they probably play that to this day, I'm
absolutely,
sure.
Absolutely.
Probably be a big hit.
Makes me think the next time I do karaoke.
You might have to look up the Anita Mui version.
Version
of Into the Groove. Well, if you like that one, you might also like this one. This is Into the Groove by Mina. And it's a little bit slow and weird. It's by an Italian artist. And I'll tell you this great quote before we play it so you can really appreciate it as you're listening. From popcultureexperiment.com, it sounds like Mina worked that track like a drag queen working in a room in Provincetown during Bear Week. That's what this sounds like. Get into the room, boy. You've got to prove your love to me. That is not on 16 RPM. Like, that
first
is the
off,
actual
I
speed.
I love the chopped and screwed version of Into the Groove.
Yeah, that's hot.
Shout
that's
out to
what
DJ
that was.
Screw. You nailed
that's
what it that time, boy. Here's an interesting theory. Madonna, at the peak of her fame, was kidnapped and replaced by a clone.
That's what happened.
And we've been enjoying the clone since 1989, and this is actually Madonna, who now lives in Italy and is unaware that the clone has been living her life.
She has no idea. Yeah, she has no idea. She's just slowing everything down one BPM every year until it gets to whatever that was.
Somebody get over to Italy and save the real Madonna.
And then just to change the sonic vibe one more time, we've heard sort of like dirgy Italian, you know, Bear Week one and the Cantonese one. This is a metal version from 1998. By a band called 10 Masked Men. That might be the best one, actually.
I don't know, man. I don't like Cookie Monster solo shit. I think that his... I like it better when he's working
when
with
he's
the
with
Henson
Rover,
crew. I
when just, he's with Fozzie Bear.
That was not Cookie's finest moment. we all know he's a cookie addict, so you know, if he's working through his stuff,
poor guy, you know what, give him a shot, give him a shot at redemption, you know. This could be his moment to shine.
Right on. Okay, so before we go, we're going to do one more song. If you haven't heard this segment before, then you're a loser. But the premise is simple. Every episode, Luxury and I will bring a song you probably haven't heard before, a deep cut, a hidden gem, something a little more obscure, Namibian drum and bass, an actually good rap rock collaboration, or maybe even a Cantonese cover of a Madonna song.
Maybe.
I see what you did there. And we'll share it with each other and with you. Luxury, you go first. What you got for me?
Well, wonderfully throughout that entire episode, like, Madonna songs are mentioned, and as they bubble up in my brain, I'm like, oh yeah, that one. Oh yeah, that one. Oh yeah, that one. Another one that bubbled up in my brain, which is like gunning for the top spot, along with Ray of Light, along with Hung Up, and along with Into the Groove. It might be this sort of deeper cut, which isn't technically a Madonna song. Do you know this cut by Jelly Bean? It's called Sidewalk Talk. Sidewalk talk, you better watch what you do.
Love
what
this song.
You do. So this song
is... Is that a Madonna song?
This is Madonna wrote this song, and she's singing backup vocals, but it's not her song technically. It's a Jelly Bean song. Jelly Bean was working on his album and asked her for a track. She apparently wrote it in a couple of days, and at one point, she was like, maybe I want this for my album, but she ends up giving it away to Jelly Bean. Yeah. And, you know, so technically, it's not a Madonna song. You wouldn't know it's a Madonna song unless you, like, do a little investigating, but that is her singing, and
I
she
love
wrote
that.
It.
That's like Michael Jackson on Somebody's Watching Me.
Yes.
You kind of have to listen. You're like, wait a second, I think I know that voice.
That voice sounds familiar.
Exactly. Here on one more song. Sometimes we choose a song that has nothing to do with the episode. That's the case in my case today. The artist is Plovdiv's Children's Choir. The song title is Toma Ketoma, T-O-M-A-Q-U-E-T-O-M-A. And here's a little snippet of it for you to enjoy. As is often the case, I hope listeners will go out and listen to the whole song, because one thing I love about this song is that it's just different. It sounds like I'm in a marketplace, maybe somewhere in South America, the Middle East.
It's like a bazaar.
Yeah, it's a bazaar. Mm-hmm. It's a cool setting. And every time I play this song out, I always get people rushing up to the DJ booth. It's not in English, so you know this is either... You get it from this podcast or you get it on your Shazam. You can't necessarily go up and ask for it. So it goes under a couple of different names, warning in advance, but the version we're directing you today was Plovdiv's, P-L-O-V-D-I-V, apostrophe S, Plovdiv's Children's Chorus. When you find it, I think you'll thank us. But we want to know what you think of this week's picks, both mine and Luxury's. Were you into the groove or not into the groove? Do you think they go into the toilet? Skippity toilet. I think we just got a couple of happy listeners out there. On to the playlist or to the shit list. You decide. And if you have a deep cut you want to share with us, you know where to hit us. Find us on Instagram or on X if you're, you know, really into hate speech. Or on TikTok, and send us your suggestions, because we do listen to them. And eventually we're going to do an episode where it's just a lot of that. Thank you for listening to one song.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this show, we're 24 episodes in. It's so exciting, and we couldn't do it without you guys listening, subscribing and giving it the 5 stars. But the big thing is really when you tell friends. Like, the word of mouth is so huge with this show. So if you're a fan, thank you so much for being a fan. And definitely spread the word. It helps us so much.
And you can find Luxury where?
Oh, and you can find me at Luxury, L-U-X-X-U-R-Y, on Instagram. And L-U-X-X-U-R-Y-X-X on TikTok, just to make it a little bit harder.
And I'm at Diallo, D-I-A-L-L-O, on Instagram. That's the easiest way to find me. Also on TikTok at Diallo Riddle, which is 12 letters instead of 6. Make it easy on yourself. Just go to Instagram.
Just give yourself a little break. And thank you for listening to One Song. We'll see you next week. Ciao. This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson with engineering from Marcus Hong. Additional production support from Jordan Colling, Charles Childers, and Alicia Shimada. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Eric Weil, and Leslie Guan.